The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to St. Luke. Jesus said to his disciples, "To you who hear, I say, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you and pray for those who mistreat you. To the person who strikes you on one cheek, offer the other as well. And from the person who takes your cloak, do not withhold your tunic. Give to everyone who asks you, and from the one who takes what is yours, do not demand it back. Do to others as you would have them do to you. For if you love those who love you, what credit is there in that? Even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is there in that? Even sinners do the same. If you lend money to those from whom you expect repayment, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners to get back the same amount. But rather, love your enemies and do good to them, and lend expecting nothing back, and then your reward will be great in heaven, and you will be children of the Most High. For he himself is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. Stop judging, and you will not be judged. Stop condemning, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and gifts will be given you, a good measure, packed together, shaken down, overflowing, poured into the hem of your garment. For the measure with which you measure will in return be measured out to you." The Gospel of the Lord. Nice to see some sunshine, huh? Yes. Really. I know many people in hearing this gospel passage, and I've heard it almost every one of my 42 years as a priest. Well, you know Jesus wasn't really meaning this literally. Oh? From whence did we get that? It sounds like an extraordinary stretch, and it is. But the one thing that Jesus does for us is he constantly stretches us. If I were to believe that, man, Jesus was just holding this up as a happy ideal, then I don't know Jesus. There's no question in my mind that he was absolutely and totally serious about this. Let me tell you about my first television set, the first television set in our home. When we were growing up, it was a 21-inch, large box, black and white set. And we got it at Christmas time, my first year in seminary. When I came home, it was a little great surprise. 21-inch screen, we had two channels, they were both from the National Broadcasting Company, RTE1 and RTE2. RTE1 began at 5 o'clock in the evening and shut down with the late news at 11 o'clock, and RTE2 began at 7 o'clock in the evening and duly shut down with the news at 11 as well. It was very simple, very well ordered. Simple programming on it. Look at me now. I took my measuring tape and I measured my television set yesterday morning, and it measures 42 inches from here to here. That's big, but you and I know a little piece about that. That's not what they sell. It wasn't a 42-inch that I bought. It was officially a 48 because they measure them diagonally, plastic and all included. And this is 48 from this piece of plastic to this piece. But it's interesting. It's got all sorts of channels, and they run day and night. And there's music available if you're so inclined that you can have on throughout the day. And it's all in color. some of it even in high definition. It's pretty amazing. Do you know the size of your television set? Yeah? Some of the sports fans really know it. Out from that, most people don't know it really. Don't know, well, it's 19 or 15 or 58 or 65 or 75. I think they've gone to 80 now. It's pretty amazing. But want to use that as a launching pad. If you want to get a larger screen, I've noticed with my own screen, no matter how much I pull it this way or this way, I can't get any more than 48 inches out of it. I can kick it and slap it and do whatever I want, but I'm not going to get any more. It's a set size, right? Hello? It is. And yours is a set size. There's a certain number of inches, and no matter what you do with it, you're not going to get any more. But let's say you needed a larger screen. You thought, man, I'd much prefer to have a larger screen. Many good reasons for it. What would you do? You'd put in place a little plan. What else would you do? You go out and buy it, right? And your plan would be, well, what size can we fit into this particular space or place that we've got? And then you check on a budget, and then you check on the sales, and everybody is offering, man, prices slashed, you can pick this one up for this, and it'll be changed again next year, so. And you go out and you do it, right? Right? Now, I want to use that as a launching pad. I want you to think, make a big shift with me. I want you to think about the size of your own screen, not your TV screen, your personal screen. In other words, how do you look out on the world? What is the size of the screen with which you view the world? When you look out at the world, your experience of life, how large is your screen? How large is the screen by which you judge other people, their actions, their behavior, their practices? How large is the screen by which you judge your own self, your actions, your behavior, your practices? Do I judge by one screen, or do I have two separate screens, one by which I judge others, and then one by which I judge myself? Has my screen become any larger over the past number of years? How did I accomplish that? How much larger has my screen become since my youth? It's a big question. Do I see the value or the importance of changing my screen size in life? Or am I content with that same secure one that I had in my youth? Very possible. Why should I change my screen size if I am perfectly happy with it, right? Maybe not so right, because it's not just about me. It's about my being a part of his much bigger picture. So, I'd like for you to grapple with that question during the course of the week. Homework? Yeah. Think about it. Is my life screen sufficiently large enough and appropriately proportionate to the journey that I am on? It's a simple enough little question, and yet could be very complex. Is my life screen sufficiently large enough for the journey that I am on? And truth is, I may need a larger screen. Now, it's quite different to the television screen. A large screen is available to you and I. It's free. Absolutely free. But it's going to require some work. Fundamentally, I'm going to have a desire to broaden or to have that larger screen in my life, where I look out at life and assess and evaluate, and I'm not attached or stuck with those same trappings that have been such a part of my life. It's free, but it will require quite some work. And it's sort of like the television said in a way, I can't just go out and pick it up, I'll need some help to get it home. But in this case, I'm talking about home of my heart. For me to have a larger screen, it's going to require a desire, some planning, some help and assistance. Now, I say that all by way of introduction to our planned Lenten experience. We have briefly introduced the program already. We've let you know. The text and the coursework is going to be Respectable Sins. Now, as a Catholic, some people will say, there's no such thing as a respectable sin. Good for you. Bully for you. Where did you learn such knowledge? Good for you. That's not a great accomplishment. That's my doctrine from growing up. And it would be easy to say, well, hey, I'm not having anything to do with that. Hey, I'm a Catholic. Good for you. But I invite you, don't adjust your set. The book and the study guide that we will be using during the Lenten season has been written by Jerry Bridges, and the subtitle is very significant, Confronting the Sins We Tolerate. We tolerate a whole lot of them. Just look around you, in me and in you. We accept them, and we don't see any great need for altering or changing them with regularity. That's just us being honest with each other. We tolerate such sins as anger, jealousy, envy, spite, gossip. One of the really evil ones. Sins of the tongue, he calls them in the book. And I'm delighted and thrilled that we're going through this study. And so is our staff. We put a lot of preparation and thought into this process so as to really challenge us in our journey. We're very excited about the opportunity that it provides us to broaden our horizons and our perspectives. I want you to know, I do not agree theologically with a number of issues or things in the book. I do not agree with many of the spiritual things. I do not agree with some of the cultural things, but I like that. Because I see my faith journey as an invitation to work through those nuances. And if I only confine myself to what I think and what I believe and my perspective, show me where there's any opportunity for growth. We don't challenge each other to look beyond and have a broader perspective. Where's the growth going to come from? And so I'm excited about the idea, and I'm excited for us, because I'm not looking for doctrine. I'm looking to deal with the core issue, personal relationship with Jesus Christ, my Lord and Savior. I'm not looking to expand my doctrine anymore. I'm looking at how can I expand this personal relationship with my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Central theme in the book is, and in the teaching, that it's exceedingly easy to make judgments about others, right? And the rest of you, right? Well, you know it. It's absolutely true. But the bigger question is, how good am I at adjudicating myself and my own practice and my own behavior? The book is going to invite and challenge us to look carefully at some of that. I can so easily make judgments about the sins and faults and shortcomings of others, but how does that help me see myself and my own person more effectively or better? I can, in the course of my life, become extremely adept at imputing guilt to other people and imputing motivation to their actions, even without any knowledge. I can become adept at that. That's just a part of life. It's a part of who I am. I didn't will myself to be that way. That is part of my nurture and culture. In other words, what I was brought up with, what I was taught, what I learned, what I saw, what I experienced, and what I integrated in my life. Nurture and culture. While that is a reality in my life, not what I wanted necessarily, but that's the way we grow in the world. There's a much bigger, much more realistic, overarching question, and that is, am I happy with my screen size? Am I happy? Am I joyful in the screen size I have? In other words, the way I evaluate and assess my world. This is a great text for really bringing us in to awareness of that. They're big questions. I invite you to reflect on them during the course of the week. And so as we look more carefully at the gospel, then we have a core issue that we're going to have to deal with. Jesus says, love your enemies. Well, in order to love my enemies, I first got to identify the enemy, right? Reasonable. Sure, identify the enemy. And the big question is the enemy without or within? Where is the enemy? Who is the enemy? Is the enemy just manifest in that person out there? Or that group out there, or that entity out there that causes me anxiety or worry or distress? Is that really the enemy, or are they simply a manifestation and the enemy is here, not out there? It's very possible. Is the enemy within? And then as a result of what I feel in response to the person or the group or the individuals or whatever it is out there, then I find the need to blame them. Why would that be so? I find the need to blame them. Could it be because my fears and my faults and my shortcomings and my conditioning are all so great that I just don't want to be unmasked? And so I got to blame someone else. Could it be that I am just terrified about my own self, that I can't bear the truth of who I really am? And I certainly don't want you to know the real me. I just don't want to be naked. Was that not the original sin? I couldn't stand being naked. Has it just transpired all of this time and we haven't given credence to it? I think it's still a real truth. Yeah, don't want to be naked. I really don't want you to know what goes on in here. My heart is really, it's got a lot of goodness, but I just don't like the bad things I see. And in order to hide and cover them, I've sometimes got to blame the other. Here's what the Master says. What emerges from within a man, that and nothing else is what makes him impure. Wickedness. And wicked designs come from the deep recesses of the heart. It's a pretty important piece. If that is true, it's a game changer. About 2 years ago, we were at staff meeting and we were practicing Lectio Divina as we do at our monthly meeting. Lectio Divina, I know, is known to many of you. It's simply a more reflective study of the Word of God. And we were reflecting on this passage, loving our enemies. One of our members was given a marvelous insight in the reflection. It was this. No one decides to be my enemy. No one decides to be my enemy. It is I who choose to see them as enemy. What a great revelation. Now, that fits in consistently with the gospel. And so when someone hurts my feelings or my pride or my ego, I can immediately identify them as enemy. I don't like them. And then, as I nurture that thought, as I begin my little pity party, the whole experience grows exponentially. And shortly, I have turned it into or invented things that were never a part of the equation to begin with. And then I say, and they thought this, and they thought this about, or they intimate or indicate, I've got a mess. And then it is, poor pitiful me. They don't love me anymore. And what are the responses I'm left with? Anger, resentment, and blame, and criticism. Can happen so easily. And then I nurture those thoughts while the other one goes off merrily about their business and they've no idea about this extraordinary cesspool that I have just created in my life, this quagmire, and I'm in this bind and I'm unwilling to forgive and I'm resentful and judgmental and critical. And they go off about their business, know nothing about this extraordinary mess that I have created for myself. It's true. We know it. If the enemy is within, and if it proceeds from my heart, as Jesus says it does, then his command to love our enemy is even more critical. Because it's back to the initial commandment. And he summarized the law and the prophets, and he made it very clear to his listeners and to the apostles. All of the law and the prophets are summarized in this. Love God and love your neighbor as yourself. As might be the most important word. Love the enemy. If the enemy resides within, then it's pretty important to love. Because it's about loving myself so that I can love my neighbor. And this gives power to the final line of the gospel today, which is really, really truthful and wonderful to know. And if I could take it in my screen and become more and more aware of this one truth, it would absolutely dramatically change my life. The measure with which you measure will be measured back to you in turn. So how much does my screen reflect? Maybe I do need a larger screen. Happy Lent. Hopefully our study and our reflection will be a powerful invitation to us to see our interior screen and the way we evaluate. And hopefully it'll make us keenly aware of the respectable sins. You know, those ones that we tolerate so easily.